Honorable members, esteemed speakers from South African Tourism, Mr. Nzima and your team, and the CEO, and the members of the board of FA Tourism. It is a pleasure for us to have you here in our parliament to show a quick account on, to brief us on the biannual report for last 6 months. That is from the 1st April to the 30th of September 2013. So without much ado, I shall allow you to make a presentation, but before that, let me introduce to all members Ms. Farida Mohammed, who has been introduced to our committee. She has not been our committee member. Assalamu alaikum. Over to you, Ms. Farida.
Honourable Chair, I will hand over to my senator to do the opening remarks. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. If I could just from outside maybe introduce everyone, because I think there are some new members who all the members might not know. Obviously, to my right, you all know Mr. Nzima, our CEO, Mr. Ntambu, Deputy Chairperson of the Board, next to him is Tim Schultz, the Chief Operating Officer, next to that, Tembi Kennedy, who is the Chief Quality Assurance Officer, and then a new face within the context of this committee, but I'm sure not within the context of Parliament, is our new Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Tom Bower. As you know, Johan has recently left South African Tourism after being there almost 12 years, and he's done a very good job for us, and we're very happy to have an extremely able replacement in Tom's. Tom was the CFO of the National Department of Tourism and Environmental Affairs several years ago. Up to now being the CFO of FANBI, so he's extremely knowledgeable, he knows the tourism industry very well, and we're very welcome, very happy to have him on board. Then, personally, we also have a staff, have a look in the corner there, Belu Bandla, who is the manager in the CEO department, and Frieda Malloy, who is our company secretary. Mr. Chair, I'm just going to make a few brief remarks and then hand over to the CEO for the detailed report. Suffice to say that the first 6 months of the year that we present here have been a fairly challenging one in terms of world economic times that we are operating both internationally and domestically, and you will see that reflected in some of our numbers. In terms of the numbers of tourist arrivals that we are demonstrating in the presentation, you will see that we still refer to arrivals in the document. You would know that we started making the differential between tourist arrivals and near arrivals, and that we will, I think most probably during the course of next year, move towards the situation where we only report on tourist arrivals. It's actually people who stayed here more than 1 night. But we do prepare all the documentation on that basis, but just on a like-for-like basis, we're still referring to arrivals. The second thing, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to bring to the committee's attention, that in the case of arrivals for the second 3 months of the 6 month quarter, that numbers have not been completely finalized. The Department of Home Affairs have changed the categories in which they capture some of the data, and that now needs to be reconciled with SA and ourselves to make sure nothing falls between the gaps, because they've added some more categories and we just need to realign. I think we hope to have that done shortly. If we talk about the first quarter numbers, Chair, we were absolutely almost blown away by the numbers. They were significantly better than we anticipated given all the prevailing market conditions. And I think we performed very well, and the DA will take us through the detail. I think in the second 6 months, the evidence that we have is that it's reverted more towards the mean in terms of the world growth that we've seen. But I think overall for the period, we should still be in line and tracking world trends. Without much further ado, Chair, if I can hand over to the CEO to take us through the detail report.
Thank you
very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. It's an opportunity once again to share with you our performance for the first two quarters of the year is determined as yet to the last third or third of the quarter. We always want to give perspective in terms of the environment in which we are operating, so that at least we deal with some of the anecdotal that may come out looking like they have impacted on where we have performed. It's still a very tough market out there. The global economic environment has still not done very well. We are still seeing challenges with regard to people reducing their average length of stay, and with that you will see its impact in terms of the average number of provinces visited, because if you don't stay longer in a country, it is not possible to visit as many countries, as many provinces as you possibly want to. Europe, being a very key market for us, still looking very fluid indeed. You never know whether they are out of the recession or not. We've also seen the challenge of disposable income across the board, as many countries continue with their austerity measures to try and boost their economies. And this has impacted a lot more on us as a long-haul destination. The European, the American economy looks like it was getting back on its feet, but with the temporary shutdown and the threat of defaulting on their debt, I think we are still going to feel the effects of this. And where we are now, we feel that we haven't seen direct cancellation coming out of this, but in the long term, there may well be an economic lag impacting on us insofar as that is concerned. But tourism remains a very important contributor to our GDP and job creation, and the revenue that we are generating out of this is very important. The chairman has already alluded to our performance against our 3-7 objectives, but at a very high level, we are reporting on the total arrivals into the country. We are chasing for the financial year 2013-14 another 13 million total arrivals. It is from this number that we convert to tourists. This is a bigger number of people arriving in this country. How many of them will in fact spend a day or two or longer in our country? So with our target, it is to generate a quarter, 3.125 million total arrivals. And out of that, we achieved 3.6. So we've done very well in that regard. And once the numbers that the chairman alluded to have been finalized, we will know exactly how we fared in the second quarter of this year. Domestic tourism, as we all know, is a very important component of our business. It will help us quite a lot to get a lot of South Africans traveling. That is our aim, to get 4 million of them traveling per quarter. This has not been easy because there are various issues that impact on that, and as a result of this, we have only achieved about 33% of our stated target in this regard, but we'll give you context in terms of what it means. But per year, we are looking to now achieve 15 million total arrivals. That number is stretching up to 2015. So this year, we will be somewhere in the 14.4 million South Africans that we would like to see traveling. We reported at the end of our annual financial statement that only 12.5 million South Africans traveled last year, generating 25 million trips. So that's where we are. The importance of all of this is, of course, the generation of revenue, and our trended revenue for this year, we are looking to generate 115 billion rand, and we are sitting at 36.1 billion rand year to date. Also very important for us that South Africa is seen by a lot of people in the market where we are operating, so the brand awareness is targeted 79%. When we reported at the end of the financial year, we were sitting at 81% awareness. So we're doing very well. South Africa continues to be visible out there based on what we advertise on CNN, on National Geographic and various platforms, social media included. The other important thing which is an enhancement in the tourist experience coming into this country is to continue to grade establishments. We are chasing a target of 6,789 this year. The good news is that year to date we are now sitting at 4,000, and we hope to continue on this kind of trend. We are also looking at the next slide. We're looking at the performance in terms of our policies and the introduction of form into our business. It's also part of us continuing to be compliant and making sure that we stay within the confines of the TFMA and supply chain and treasury regulations. In this regard, we have done very well. We are hoping that when the external audit are done this year, we will look very good. We are operating very well so far as the National Prevention Bureau is concerned, a newly established unit in our area which focuses on really increasing the number of delegates coming to this country. It's an ongoing exercise, but as you can see, the number of bids that we have supported are 30, and that has an economic impact of 622 million rand. And we also have a bit of detail to show you how these numbers that we are getting will support our tourist arrivals in the country and how they will also contribute to the growth in our economy. So that is the high level performance, but let's give you also a comparison of where we sit in the world space. When we say our tourism grew 8.6% in the first quarter, where was the average performance globally? It was sitting at 7%. I think at this stage, I do need to highlight to honorable members that in the past few years, South Africa has consistently outperformed the world, but this is not going to last forever, honorable members. We have to be realistic about it. The economic conditions are changing, the markets where we are operating are changing, and people are changing their habits. So once we have done very well, we do need to also indicate that the base is increasing year in and year out. And as that base increases, we are no longer going to be performing a double digit number. So that is very, very important. But for now, we have performed better than most of the countries except the Middle East. The Middle East looks good from a percentage point of view, but the base was eroded a few years ago. And you will know that given the kind of instability that has been happening in the Middle East, and Egypt was the case in point, they have taken no time. So when you see a percentage increase like that, it's the context of it of what it is. And in fact, it's better than the previous few years' growth. Yet today, that it was growing better. So we are happy to say that our numbers are growing very well. Let's be very cautious about high expectations in the foreseeable future. When it comes to tourist growth, I've just alluded to the 8.6% growth that we have registered. It comes across the board in markets where South African tourism has invested. It tells you that we have diversified our investment very well, getting the Asia and Australia markets to grow at 27%. There's a lot we've done in setting up offices in Australia, of course, and China recently. There's also some contribution from the EU, the operations of South African Airways in those markets. But in a nutshell, you see Asia being number one in terms of growth, not in absolute numbers. Europe, though, sitting at number three, in absolute numbers, 430,000 tourists coming from there, and America being number four. The second biggest is the Africa Air markets, and you'll see how this one impacts on our numbers overall. So this is the picture on tourists that has happened in the past year. And when it comes to the total arrivals, which is the number against which we are measured, the growth was 12.2%. Again, coming from across all the regions where we are invested. I was saying earlier on that you take the 3.6 million arrivals for the first quarter, and out of that we convert to tourists. And that's the number that we're talking about earlier on. The seminar indicated that going forward will give you a much clearer report which does not refer to total arrivals and tourist arrivals, but just building history to make sure that we have a context in this. So that is the picture, market where we are operating, how we are doing, still doing good, not a single market showing a negative growth there. I think also for the benefit of everybody, the important long-haul markets of Europe grew at 9.1%. That's really encouraging, just considering that the fact that the biggest economic impact was felt in Europe. Most of the countries pretty much looking technically bankrupt. The next slide really gives you an explanation. If you didn't see numbers that in Europe come from different countries, it just gives you an indication here to say it is We're still looking very good in most of our markets, and Asia has done very well, as I indicated earlier on. I think we need to also highlight the success story of China. It continues at 27.4% to be a very significant player. We recorded last year the highest growth of 57% coming from China, Macau and Hong Kong included in the mainland China. To move to the fourth most important source of long-haul tourism to South Africa. So China has done very, very well. That is what has influenced the growth in the Asia and Pacific region. And also we are seeing some the good growth coming from the market of the UK. That's a very, very important market for us. A slight decline, 2.7%. I think, Honorable Chair, this came as a big surprise for us, just considering the fact that this market has not been doing very well. We are beginning to see signs now of a slow economic recovery. I think, Chair, this is only in the third quarter of the year. We're talking the first and the second quarter now. Whether that will translate into outbound tourism growth is another matter. So we're not quite sure yet how confident the British will be when they see that economic growth happening. Germany, 17.6% growth. I think it's a solid growth. But keep in mind that we were not talking about a very low base here. We're talking about a base that has been growing. And the growth, when we say solid growth, for the past 3 years, Germany has been sustaining a positive growth, just short of 10% on average. So it's another very good one. Once again, Germany is under pressure to help fund more of the economies in Europe that are in trouble. I don't think this kind of situation will continue for a long time. The Netherlands is a concern for us, and we are taking steps to make sure we address that. Italy, once the number is looking good, it's off a very low base. Yes, we are ahead with the number that we are seeing there. The challenge in Italy is the cost of doing business. The austerity measures that have been introduced in Italy are beginning to affect our return on investment, and this is something that has the executive team and the board are looking into very, very closely, and they will have a conversation with the board as far as that is concerned. Yeah, Central America is doing very well, and the Middle East has shown that growth has reached or has recovered, but Region Africa still holds its own, in spite of the fact that we are off a huge base here. That 7.2% must not be taken for granted. But again, even the economy of Africa are not immune to what is happening globally. You know, so just watch that space and see how it's going to affect us. The impact of all of these things that I've spoken about, the change in the length of stay, the reduction in disposable income, the very fluid economies that we see, has resulted in lesser spend coming to our country. So average spend has gone down from 9,200 to 8,000. This is important because if you look at the biggest areas that have affected us, it is your Africa Air and your Africa Land. I said earlier on, you're looking at arrivals of 1.2 million into Africa. And this, the average spend coming from these markets have gone down in the way that they did. They will pull everything down. So we celebrate the growth in Europe. We celebrate the growth in Asia and Australasia, but it is not enough to have uplifted the average spend. So that's very important, based on the fact that Africa Air and Land contribute significantly in the country, in the tourism environment. I indicated that whilst we still get the benefit of numbers showing the growth that we have received, but the fact that people are not staying long in our country does affect the average number of provinces that they are visiting when they are in our country. And this, again, is one of those things that we have to keep working hard at to make sure that the trend does stabilize somewhere. But as you can see, the Europeans are also beginning to do that. And we only see Asia and Australia that is growing up, but the rest of the market is really showing a reduction in the average number of provinces that are visited. And again, you've seen the reduction in the average spend that is coming out of these various countries. And also, in terms of where do they visit the most, Gaoxing continued to just defy all sorts of odds. A lot of people don't think that Gaoxing is getting a fair share of tourism, but from an international tourism point of view, Gaoxing is actually dominant. Last year they were getting 46% share of tourism into this country. It's going up now to 47%, which means Gaoxing is getting more experiences packaged and people are beginning to discover Gaoxing. And it is also pleasing to see the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal kind of holding their own. KwaZulu-Natal showing a bit of a slide, maybe something that we should be concerned about, but we are doing some work. We start with the domestic tourism, filtering through to international to make sure that provinces do get a fair share of their tourism. This is part of our mandate to increase the distribution of tourism within the geographies of South Africa and not just continue to encourage people to go to the Gauteng, Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. So yes, the effort that we are dealing with now are aimed at making sure that we discharge our responsibility very, very well, working together with the provinces. So there's quite a lot of work that we're doing. It may not necessarily be covered in today's presentation. The results that we have reported come from this kind of market. Every 3 years, we engage in what we call the portfolio review. This is what gives us a scientific way of deciding the markets in which we are going to be operating in the period from the 1st of April 2011 up to March 2014. We decided on these markets. What we have at the top is what is seen as core markets. These are the markets that provide our bread and butter, and we have investment markets, and you can see the spread, and then all the way, making sure that we've covered all the markets. The whitelist markets also support our embassies in different areas where South African tourism may not have a presence, and we have structures and processes in place that assist embassies in the promotion of tourism, including collateral marketing material that they are using to understand how they can help us. Going forward, we have just finalized our fifth portfolio review. This will kick in from the 1st of April in 2014 to 2017. With that in mind, there has been a shift. You may not have noticed the shift in terms of core markets that have, the markets that have moved from investments, and some of them from the technical markets have moved up to the core market, and some have, there's also been a shift in the investment market. But this, honorable members, is what South African tourism is going to be investing in for the next 3 years. When asked why we don't have an office in certain countries, the answer for us lies in here. And we have been informed by research and a very detailed empirical information that tells us we can get better return on this market. And as you can see, the challenge sometimes is the size of the opportunity vis-a-vis the resources that we have at our disposal, the budget, the people that we can employ. And with this in mind, how do we then service the market? We then embark on the next slide. We then have to say, it is not possible to service all markets. What are we going to do? Let's have a strategy that is a hub strategy that helps us to position ourselves in different strategic areas of the world that can allow us to service the bigger markets as well as emerging markets in the areas at very, very low cost of getting into the market. We also need to indicate at this stage that South African Airways, South African Tourism, has committed itself to opening 4 new offices in this current financial year. We are already up and running in Nigeria. Honorable members, we came here, we committed to opening these offices. Nigeria is now ready and will be having an official opening on the 10th of December. The next 3 offices that are planned to be opened in this current financial year is in Africa, is Kenya. And we are also looking at Angola, and Brazil is also on course to be opened before the end of the financial year. And the slide here shows where board has given us approval to add trade relations managers in a hub format to allow us to service the various as I indicated, so that at least with the limited resources that we've got, we are able to penetrate and touch all the key markets out there. I won't go into detail, but it's quite self-explanatory. A very key component of our business is to make sure that, as you could imagine, the volatility of the global economy impacts directly on tourists considering whether to come to South Africa or to go to other countries which are considered short haul. As a result of that, we get exposed when the tourists switch destinations and don't come to South Africa. It's very important for us that we therefore focus on domestic tourism. Domestic tourism has not done very well in the past year. The first objective that I shared with you in the first line is to get more South Africans to travel. When we say results have not been very good, if you look at the second quarter of 2012, we had 7 million adults who traveled last year. This year, it has gone down to 5.5 million. We'll give you a bit of context in terms of what impact of this, what influences this. The average number of trips that they are taking is also not looking good. They've reduced from 2.3 trips to just taking 1.9 trips a year. These are South Africans now. We also look at the purpose of travel. Our objective is that once we will encourage people to travel for holiday, there are those who are traveling for business that may not necessarily be marketing, because the reason for traveling is not influenced by the marketing initiatives that we have. However, our objective is to convert those who initially go on holiday, on business trips, to start looking at holiday trips. As you can see from the slide, that the holiday trips in 2012, the second quarter that we're talking about, was at 14%, and it is now declining to 9%. So people are not taking enough holiday trips. We are worried about that. The other very important consideration for us is we want people to spend money. We have shown an improvement from 5 billion rand to 5.2 billion rand. Where does it come from? People are saying people are not traveling enough, the average number of trips are not enough. It comes from the fact that when South Africans travel, at the moment, they stay a little bit longer. Last year, they used to stay on average 3.9 nights away. Now they are staying 4 nights away, which means they make sure that the cost of travel is reduced in terms of frequency, not many times, but when they are there, they stay a little bit longer. When they are out there, they also spend a little bit more. Last year, they used to spend 706 rand a trip. It's now up at 980. So this may be a function of an increase in either the hotel rate or the cost of meals, transport, and so on and so on. It may not necessarily be something that they consciously decide to do, but it is something that we are looking to focus on. And what is important, honorable members, is also to look at the reasons why people are not traveling. Consistently, you see at the bottom there that the number one reason why people are not traveling is because they cannot afford it. If you look at the percentage from 2011 until 2013, it was 82% of people saying, I can't afford it. Stayed like that even 2012, but it's going up now, 38%. So people are saying, no, it is not affordable to travel. And again, it's context of the reason why we see less adults traveling. The second reason that they are getting is, I'm not sure why I'm a traveler. This is where we come in to say, let's give you the reason to travel. And the reason to travel, I'm going to go into it now, which also gives an answer as to what are we doing about this challenge of South Africans not traveling enough, not taking enough trips. If the reason for not traveling is because you don't have the money, but you also say, I haven't given you enough reasons, what are we going to tell you that's going to excite and encourage you to travel? So these are very, very important things, because they talk to the next slide. They talk to a variety of issues. It talks to the cost of living in the country. It talks to unemployment. It talks to consumer spending, which is something that feeds into the economy. We have recorded the lowest consumer spend, 2.3%, down from 4.4% last year. So these are things that are not necessarily within control of South African tourism, but it is something that we want to try and address. South Africans obviously do not associate much value with travel, as opposed to spending money on the latest cell phone for going on what we call retail therapy as opposed to travel therapy. So South Africans would rather have something to show off and to look, you know, all of us when we sit at the table, you'd rather see my phone, it is the latest. So that's the kind of thing that South Africans have, and the type of car I drive, and not value in travel. Whereas other cultures have taste. They don't want you to talk about how rich you are, is how much have you traveled. So therein lies the difference. So with all of these things in mind, we are aiming at disrupting this pattern. We want to disrupt the retail therapy and introduce travel therapy because it lasts a little bit longer. And as an anchorist, we then introduce our domestic campaign. Nothing more fun than a short left. You will remember that most of you asked when you introduced Bayamzat, what happened to short left? And it must have been a little bit painful for most of you why we are not continuing to call it short left. We've done our work, and we think that this new campaign will inject a lot of excitement and get people excited about travel. It will answer to the second important reason why people are not traveling, where they are asking us, give us the reason to travel. We tell them it's more fun when you travel, you meet new friends, you connect with people, you also reward yourself after a year or a few months of hard work. It is much more longer lasting than going on your retail therapy. We kick-started this campaign, and literally really kick-started with Dr. Mandela with his infectious love for dance and very unorthodox fashion. It's going very, very well so far. When you look at some of the changes that we are recording right now, we say we are on the right track. But who are we talking to? The initial campaign, short left, traditionally targeted just one segment. It was the up-and-coming black market. And we introduced Bayam Zanti, although we broadened the segment, but it just did not cover enough. So this new campaign is going to talk to five segments. And we'd like to say it's five segments plus one. The five segments have been outlined there, and the reason for wanting to go for this segment is because they've got disposable income that they can spend on travel if they traded correctly. Our research has indicated that South Africans are spending, but they are just not spending on travel. That, like I indicated, you spend on retail, on the latest jeans, latest phone, and so on and so on. But these people have got money, as you can see. They can spend it on travel if we do our work very, very well. The reason we say it's fast, second plus one, is just if you look at the average years that are targeting, we are saying it's 18, 24, 25 plus, 25 to 45, 18 to 45, and you wonder what's happening to the 50s plus who have got disposable income. So these are the young at heart, like all of us, yes? we want travel, and we want to be seen to be going on all those kind of things that the young ones are doing. So we're targeting that market as well because it does have disposable income. In fact, there are families that they want to reward for supporting them. So that's what we're doing. With that, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I'd like to now hand over to Tibi to talk us through the work we're doing in the grading council, and that will be followed by either team or Tom talking. We've got Lani talking, and then it can be Tom or team. So you take us through the grading council's work, as well as the National Convention Bureau, what we're doing now and what is in the pipeline, then how are we spending the money. So far, Tom will talk us through that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. From the grading council side, there's not much in terms of things that I'd like to highlight, except that at this point we're sitting at half year, we're sitting with 5,600 establishments. Western Gate still helping the rest with the most establishments graded, there's 2,000 establishments, followed by Gauteng and KZN, with the Eastern Cape catching up very fast. So on that score, all I would like to say though is that we are getting every month, record numbers of people applying to get graded. At the same time, just as many people cancel it, because again, remember, grading is not voluntary. and a lot of the establishments are shutting down or getting out of business, as Slami indicated earlier, you know, short time spending and spending less. So it is affecting the trading conditions. From the number of rooms on the next slide, we have just over 100,000 rooms, again in the same vein. Gauteng, although coming second to Western Cape in terms of the number of establishments, Gauteng has the most number of rooms, which is all the majority of the hotels are situated in Gauteng, at 29,000 rooms, followed by Western Cape and then KZN. And that's about it. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just share with you the work of the National Convention Bureau. We're really proud of the work that has been done so far. As our CEO indicated, this was a new addition to our business. For the period 2013 to 2017, because of the nature of the work, it allowed us to secure new events and conferences going forward. So for that period, we've already secured 106 in terms of putting this forward and meeting this bid. If we translate that into terms of economic impact, we are talking about 2.9 billion rand. Estimated number of delegates are 219,980. And on average, the total will spend over 461 days with us. Just in quarter one and two, we've already secured 30 bids. And that alone for the two quarters is already going to secure us for this financial year 222 million rand. Next slide. Just in conclusion, Chair, as you said, this is a new addition, and I think we are quite proud to see the success in terms of this. We've been attending for Meetings Africa, which is in February. In terms of the ICA ranking, our executive responsible is not here, which is attending an ICA conference, and that is we need to really profile it all. As a preferred business destination. So we're very happy with the work done here as a far. Okay. And over to Tom.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Members. If I can give you some feedback in terms of our spending so far. I think for the first 6 months, during the first 6 months of 2013-14, there was total spend of 604 million rand, which represents 89% of the year-to-date expenditure on a budget of 682 million rand. So we're a bit short on spending about of 77.9 million rand. That's on the straight line. But if one look at the total budget, we've already spent about 62% of the total budget of 968 million rand. So I think we're on track and we will spend the money as we've done in the past. We're confident we will spend the money. If one, the next slide, please. Thank you. If one look at the expenditure by country offices and business units, 9 of the African tourism countries' offices spend 90% or more of the year-to-date budget. 2 countries offices slightly below budget, Amsterdam and Nigeria. I think the CEO alluded to the opening of the Nigeria office. And in the country offices with significantly below budget was Brazil, Angola, and Kenya. I think those are new offices that will be opened soon or as the CEO has indicated before end of the year. So we're quite behind on spending regardless. Of the South African tourism, 17 business units, 12 spend 90% or more on the 2013-14 year-to-date budget. 3 are a bit behind, African Furio, Tourism Trading Council, and the Western Business Unit. And 2 business units are significantly below that National Convention Bureau and Human Resources. I think the CEO is also referred to, or the CEO is referred to the Africa Meeting in Africa. That's why we are behind on that, and we will receive spending will accelerate in the next quarter, next month. As I said, we have a meeting tomorrow also to discuss in ESCO the reasons to accelerate better spending from that regard. Capital spending, this is where we are very underspended. Only 7% of the capital budget has been spent so far. The big reasons is the opening of the offices of Angola, Brazil and Nigeria, and then also the head office plan, which is a huge chunk of the money, about half of the money, have not received a relevant approval from the local authority. So that are the reasons for that. So it's about 15 million rand, and we are very behind on that in terms of the spending. Chairperson, that is the financial report as we speak.
Well, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we thank you very much for the opportunity. We realize it's very difficult to give you all the information. It can be very detailed from our point of view, but at the same time, we need to give you some very digestible kind of information, and it gives us an opportunity, therefore, to engage in terms of questions, which we will happily take, as always, supported by the board here and our full executive team. We will handle all the questions. Thank you very much. Our chair, I'm not sure if you want to add anything in conclusion.
No, thank you very much. I think we can take comments from the committee. Thank you. Please.
Thank you, Chairperson, Mr. Kuba, and Mr. Zuma, and the team as a whole for the presentation. But before we go forward, let me acknowledge Mama O, Mr. Nomzamo Pengu from the Department, National Department of Tourism, and Mr. Faro, and Mama O, Mama Zom,
and
hey, itching. What itches you, Mr.
He wants to acknowledge his.
And at the same time, let me say you are sorry for the SMS we sent that indicated that it is half 8. Instead of 10 o'clock. Yeah, we're sorry for that. The intention was to make time 10 o'clock. And perhaps thank you, Mr. Tom Bauer. We hope we are going to work with you as well as we had worked with the former CFO, and he gave our country an outstanding service during this system, and we were very much impressed. And he made us all proud. Remember that although you are the side of the executive and you are the side of the oversight, but at some level it is our government. And then when you perform, we are really proud. But without much ado, I think I need a summary on this, on performance, on capital expenditure, on performance, on personnel expenditure. Just in short, on those two, and then we can look at the rest.
Honorable Chair, let me to give an explanation on this one. The first one on CAPEX expenditure, as the CFO indicated, we had budgeted that the four new offices were going to kick start at the beginning of the financial year. We've had some logistical delays when we started the process. It became very clear to us that the red tape in most of these countries is very, very long. As well as the approach that we took to prudently mitigate against risk. We did not want to open the offices with firstly setting up a wrong entity, which does not help us in the reduction of unnecessary taxes that we have to pay in the various countries. So we went through a very painstaking exercise of making sure that we will register ourselves correctly as an entity of the government that does not have to pay taxes in the various countries. That secondly, we will be in compliance with the financial regulations in the country, and the third part being the labor assistance. As a result of that, we then staggered the opening of offices so that we deal with one office, clean it up at a time. So the expenditure on CAPEX was about the acquisition of furniture, the conditioning in the offices, which has now been delayed. So it will come through as we set up these offices. It may even, for that matter, mean in some instances we pay a little bit more because our cost estimates were based on opening these offices a little bit later. they did touch off on the head office revamp. We realized the head office is going very fast, and we looked at an option of either extending the building or expanding the car park area. The project that the CFO is talking about, where there's been a delay, is the change in the car park area. That is where the money is going to be spent. It is committed, and we believe that it will go ahead, and then you will see this expenditure coming through as quickly as possible. So that's where we are insofar as CAPEX is concerned, and we really have a plan in place, and we will make sure that this money is spent in the current financial year. HR expenditure is equally affected, firstly, by the delays in opening of offices. Whilst we are spending money on the marketing initiative, and even in those countries where we had planned to set up offices, there are two parts to it. Once you set up a fully based office, which you then mend by bringing in your own personnel, that has been the delay. But the marketing initiatives are happening, so we're spending money on the marketing side of it. So it is the result of this struggling where we had planned to open the office earlier on, and it is now delayed. So we are looking at doing everything that we can to still be able to spend the money. Honorable members, you will remember that when we gave you the annual financial statement, we highlighted, among other things, our foreign currency exposure risk and what the Treasury has allowed us, with the support of the National Department of Tourism, the money that they have now agreed to disperse to us. It is still not enough to cover the gap in terms of that unbudgeted expenditure. So what we believe we can possibly do is, where we have delayed expenditure on personnel, is to move the money to cover some of these gaps. So this is not enough as well, but we've done the exercise to make sure that we stay within the budget and we spend the money. So it's just a process that, as the CFO was saying, we are having an executive meeting tomorrow to make sure that we constantly stay in touch with this, we move money around where we believe it is not going to be spent, but to be used in items that we would have planned for, and making sure that it's not just budget dumping. Thank you very much, Chair. I don't know if I've covered the Chairman.
Mr. Clow, Mr. Sharp, Chair, thank you very much for apologizing for me. It's not my normal nature to arrive late at meetings like this, but the Chair has explained the reason. But Mr. Zimmer and your team, thank you very much. You, I think, like most of us, are invigorated by your passion for this industry, and the way you present it in such slick fashion, as it shows that you've got everything at your fingertips, which is nice to know. The sort of thing that I would just like to get clarity on, Chair, is whether in your quarterly reports there is some sort of north-south, call it, relationship vis-a-vis the season, because tourism has seasons, you know. People like to come here when it's warm, not when it's cold, and vice versa when you go up north. Now, this has varied obviously on your outcomes of your results, and I just want to know what and how you factor that into the scenario, because I'm not familiar with China's weather or something, but I would imagine they also want to get away from the cold to get here somehow. So if you could just give me some indication how these quarterly reports, which actually could, you know, to my mind, actually really not give a true reflection in terms of the next quarter, you might find that there's an influx because you're going to get a more south relationship when they're having their winter and so on. So I'd just like to get some indication of that. The other thing which I think maybe you must guide on, because I've been picking up in the media, is that clearly some of the issues relating to our air links are key to the success of what you're projecting here to us today. And it's disturbing to hear, first of all, that the alliance between the Nigerian Airways and SAA is sort of breaking down and there's problems there. We also hear rumors saying that the Buenos Aires flight with SAA is going to be pulled out of the system. You know, that can have a massive impact on what you're thinking and how you're working, because you are relying on those mechanisms to ensure that you're going to get bums in the seats and you're going to get people to get bums in the hotel. I mean, that's a simple, basic, you know, background to what I'd like some reflection from, and whether you can give some ideas there. The thing that clearly worries me, if I can just put a finger on some of the issues, which maybe there's an answer to,
But how involved are you in persuading travel agents around the world about firstly trying to package some of these initiatives? We have 1.7, the highest visitation day to one of our provinces. We've got 9 provinces, and spread across them are wonderful scenes, you know, where like one could either get whatever experience you want. But there's got to be a bucket list somewhere to say, look, if you come into South Africa, you must go and see the Kruger National Park. I'm not using that as one of the top priorities. Or you must go to Table Mountain, or you must go and see this, or you must go and see that. Just like Kenya is packaging its environmental issue around the Masai, you know, Serengeti sort of, and the migration, which seems to be the biggest attraction. And funny enough, when we went to Indaba, if you went to any of the stands at Indaba, the biggest buzz that was taking place was around the East African marketing facilities and the stands, because they were pumping this thing, and people, it was just different to what we saw from local government initiatives, which I felt was a total waste of time. But it's about packaging. And, you know, there were the two countries sitting together, Tanzania and Kenya, and they were now discussing, because this migration takes across into one country and another, and Kilimanjaro, how they can actually make sure the person's going to have a long-distance haul to Africa, that they see some of these other facilities. Which brings me to the issues about whether, you know, you have interaction with SADC to the degree of actually saying, look, if you're going to go all that way, spend all that money to Africa, maybe you should cut in, see Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe Falls, or what they call it, Victoria Falls. See the Kruger Park, get here, get there. It'll just mean that, secondly, within the country, you're going to spread certain of the layers around. And I just wonder whether, in fact, the attraction to Gauteng, you know, I don't like concrete jungles, you know, and I avoid Gauteng. My apologies to those people that come from it. But I don't know whether that is not a transit figure. You know, our statistics must tell us that, because the people land there. That's our central hub check. Everybody lands at Oahu, and from there they then go on their various things. And I think it might be a reflection of something that might not be under all. I don't know. I've got one more question, and I think that the chairperson raised was also about the capital expenditure, and particularly the opening up of these offices. Now, I just wanted to know, and to be made aware, whether any assistance is given to you by the embassy, because I see them as the lead department in setting yourselves up. They would be the ones that live there, they've worked there, they've been there, they know what it's, you know, they don't want to reinvent the wheel going into a country. They know what the current rates of rental facilities are, the security issues, the foreign exchange issues. And I'm wondering what the agent you have to cut down this problem that the chair raised quite rightly about your lack of expenditure, because you have this deliberation of red tape, which takes a long time. And, you know, for instance, Kenya, I would think is an easy situation, you know, to deal with. And your location and your security, where that thing is situated, particularly in light of what happened there, is such that the embassy, with all the intelligence and, their, you know, and all the leakages they have to that type of information, should be your point of call. And I'm just wondering whether we need to help there in any way, the committee, to ensure that you're getting the support. Because really, it would be a diplomatic note, really, and saying, we want to put an officer, what do you can, and they should actually do the groundwork so that you can move in and spend the money that you so are budgeting. That's it, Chair. Thank you very much. I much appreciate the support. I think it's encouraging and shows the way for excellence. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Farrell. Then, Mr. Shah, and after Mr. Shah, it will be Mujove. After Mujove, it will be Mohamed.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and I also would like to recognize the work that you're doing in very challenging circumstances, competitive circumstances. You rightfully made a strategic decision to strengthen domestic tourism in view of the global economic decline and the impact that it has. So that's the right decision, I think. However, as you have also understood it, and I also understand it, that these increased unemployment, increase in taxes, income tax, increase in even policies, you see, No, no, this doesn't leave much, you know, disposable income for people to travel. And their priority is to eat food. And that is why, you know, we rely so much on FDI, capital investment, because without faith, there's nothing safe. Which means then you might have to want to look at a long-term strategy for domestic tourism. And I would like to make following suggestions if it is viable. It means we'll need to change the mindset of our people in order to inculcate the culture of tourism. But I think it will have to start young. Now, I know you got these Macready short letters, all of this. I'm talking about a target. Perhaps looking at the Department of Education and sitting down with them, they're coming up with a creative product for schools, marketing at schools. Have a day at school, show them a video, talk about the country, some kind of thing creative at school level, where you can get these young minds interested in tourism at that young age, so that by the time they come out of school, then the other thing the Department of Education can do is to try and come up with some curriculum design which includes tourism, you know, promotes it vigorously as a subject matter at school, not a compulsory subject, but something that's there in the curriculum, as well as increase at tertiary level the various skills that are required for the sector. So I think you might want to explore it. The other one concern I would have would be about the offices that hub offices in African market that you are now, you know, beginning to establish. I think you must be very careful the quality and type of people you're going to be appointing. Let there not be any, sorry, I don't want to use the term. All right, you know what I'm saying.
No. No.
You know?
No.
Yeah, should I say it? Sorry, now. There should be no favoritism or nepotism or cronyism involved in that process. Totally professional, totally ambassadors of tourism. That's the quality of people you're going to have in that market. Anything less than that, you're going to be just throwing money at nothing. They're going to go there and themselves go to the bush in Kenya and have a nice job. Germany happens to be, I think, the second largest trading partner for us. And there's an observation I want to make. Because it is our largest, second largest, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is that one of the factors why we saw a healthy growth rate of 17.6% in that market, which then means that tourism, I mean that business and trade between us and Germany has something to do with this. If that is the case, then you might want to be more creative in packaging things for business sector, you know, and then identify which other countries are we dealing with, and see whether that is indeed a pattern, that with countries where we have increased trade, is reflected in stats or figures to show that, you know, that there is an increase in visitation, right? That's Germany, all right. Yeah, you spoke about the Department of Home Affairs recategorizing redefining what constitutes international arrival, and you said it would go to that essay, and then you would get the figures from them consolidating. What do you know? What criteria are you using in order to do this category differentiation? And have they given you any indication as to by when that process will be completed? Because at this time, you know, obviously, you need statistics in order to do whatever you're doing. So there are a lot of initiatives underway as it is. So you are probably working according to other categories. Now you're going to redefine the whole thing. So how long are they going to take? Because then you've got medium, long-term projects as well. And then domestic tourism, back towards domestic tourism, I made that initial suggestion. But then the question to ask is your budget for domestic marketing adequate to meet the strategic shift that you are making? That's the question. If it isn't, then we need to know, so that we as a committee here can perhaps, what if we are doing a VRR, I think, I'm not sure whether we included the, you know, VRR to increase budget for marketing, we just looked at absolutely. But it will require budget, the marketing needs money. It's money well spent, but is it adequate? You know, we press about that. And very quickly here, with your permission, two more questions. No. Yeah, two more. Tourism trade income. I haven't seen all the details of
where it works and what improvements you've made or what marketing strategy are you using. I mean, tell us, are you using some creative method, providing some kind of incentive to people, you know, making some effort to encourage them to become, you know, to create themselves? We know, you know, over time, there were some reasons that people gave. Some bad, maybe, I don't know. You know better. But what are you doing something more creative than simply saying people, you do this? Are we showing them the benefits of it? Or what incentives are we giving people? What's the progress in that regard? And finally, your target of 115.4 billion. We're almost at the end of the year right now. And you didn't meet your first target, but slightly. But do you think in the rest of the year, we've got a few months left, you think you'll be able to achieve that target? Thank you.
Thank you very much, let me apologize for having me late. I traveled on time because I was chasing up a stand as per the message that we received from the secretary. I do accept your apologies, but I do feel that the secretary should have then contacted us if the time came. He should have phoned us one by one to tell us that the time has come. I mean, I've been sitting in my office since 9 o'clock, and I was very happy to have the 1.5 hours to prepare, only to find that I'm actually stealing my time for the meeting. I'm really not happy about it. Anyway, thank you for the apology taken. And this room also, I really want to appeal maybe to the committee who is now. This room is not convenient. Both of them, E34 and 540, 340 and 540, when you are having visitors. I'm raising this now in the presence of the visitors themselves. Last time we raised it while we were alone. I think that the committee on tourism has got to assert itself. We have to find a way of asserting ourselves. There's a lot of bathrooms here. Yeah. And possibly that, for instance, the bigger bedrooms, as we are sitting crowded here, are actually empty. So we have to accept ourselves. I know this. If you accept, you know, a particular type of treatment, they'll give you that treatment forever because they know you accept it. But if you don't accept it and you accept yourself, they know, and they will not give it to you. Anyway, let me come to the question of I noticed that they were talking about our visitors from overseas countries, China and Brazil, do excel in terms of providing us with the visitors. But I wanted to find out from the presenters whether these visitors are mainly leisure people coming for leisure in South Africa, or is it mainly business people? I'm referring more to China and Brazil in particular. I'm aware, for instance, of the BRICS organization that might have influenced it. Now, coming to the number of the provinces that are visited by all tourists, I missed the presentation on that because I would have asked which ones are mostly affected, which provinces are mostly affected in terms of the numbers of visitors from overseas not visiting those provinces. And they have we worked out what the reason could be for those provinces not to be visited as much as the others. And looking at the figures, for instance, the graph in page on slide 15, I find that Mpumalanga seems to be one of the, but if my calculations are correct, it seems to be the one that has lost most visits and the Free State, and Mpumalanga. I don't really understand much about Mpumalanga, because Mpumalanga is such a beautiful story. And it is so much for the tourists. My question then would be, are we really marketing our provinces well enough for the visitors coming from overseas to be able to say, I will not miss going to Mpumalanga, I will not miss going to the Free State. Next question. Financial tourism is hoping to benefit the global market more in the future. I wanted to find out, what is it that you hope to do which you have not done so far? What is it that you're going to do differently? On the whole, you are successful. Let me admit that. But now you hope to penetrate more. So I want to find out, what is it that you're going to do which you have not really done up to now? As for domestic tourism, I think my colleagues have largely covered me there. I'm not quite sure whether we can say by targeting the age, that's 18 to 45 is the number of years, isn't it? 18 years to 45 years, yeah. The age. We are targeting 18. For me, the 18-year-olds are still in the educational institutions. They don't have money, they don't work. That's what they're supposed to give, really. They don't have money, they don't work. I'm not sure if we target them as individuals, we are hoping to increase, you know, the domestic science impact. I mean, the domestic tourism impact. Also, I think I would support, in fact, I have read this before, but I support what Honorable Shah has mentioned about the group visits, you know, group tourism. He has quoted the school. Yes, even though they may not spend much, but I think in terms of the numbers can be large enough for this, for them even to cover up the spending that we are expecting. So I would also encourage that, you know, we try very hard to find a way of encouraging these groups to take up their trip to the country. Because we all know the other advantage for the younger group, the pushing of them getting to understand and know the country better. And I think if they do at that age, maybe when they become adults, they would then also love traveling for leisure. Yeah. I think we should target them. The only thing that can be discouraging, but I don't know to what extent it is, but I know in the Eastern Cape, in the last few months or so, particularly this year and I think last year, there are quite a lot of accidents, you know, that affected this kind of a trip. I know in my area alone, there's more than three or so of those accidents. I mean, parents try hard to get them the funds to help their children take a trip, but now it is very disappointing, almost embarrassing to those of us, for those who are in the area where we are, when now, instead of the parents receiving their children back and getting to know from them how the trip was, all they receive is a call. So I think something there needs to be done. It's a question of, I think, in the governmental relations, yourself, for instance, and the Department of Transport, and the behavior of the drivers on the road, particularly the taxis, because these are the ones that have caused such accidents. You know, instead of children arriving, they go with terrible issues. And now that is interesting, something that has been mentioned by the other speakers too. The question of offices. I'm getting confused. I'm not confused. Has the office in Angola been open or not open? This is not yet open. I'm asking this because that name Angola and an office in Angola, it's been on the cards for a very long time. We run the car for a very, very long time, I must say. And we have been talking about problems with that office in particular, and I think Nigeria as well. I think Kenya is doing. Now, my comment then would be, can't it be in Angola? Can't the office be elsewhere? Why not Namibia, for example? If there are problems with the office in Angola, I know economically Angola is more than, is better than Namibia, but maybe, I don't know whether the reason may be political as well, but can't we then move the office to another country? That's my point. If, for instance, we find that it is not happening in the country that we have identified, could we stick to Angola or should we find another suitable African country where we can open an office? It is very important.
Thanks for interrupting. Mohammed.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to comment on grading council. I must admit that you said something said with regard to grading of many places, but you haven't said much about or anything about the establishment, the graded establishment that was closed. Have you got any statistics with regard to the ones that have shut down or closed, and perhaps the reasons why they had to close? Also, in terms of the bids, I think a lot was said with regard to how many you've won, but nothing was said with regard to how many bids were lost. So perhaps if we could look at that, and perhaps apply lines as to why did we lose them. I also perhaps want to say something about Home Affairs. Home Affairs with regard to issuing of the visas also impacts directly on tourism. Perhaps we want some comments with regard to your communication with Home Affairs if that hampers our targets with regard to tourism. Because I think it definitely has an impact on the tourism numbers that we are concerned about. Another thing that I picked up was from your graph here. According to page 7, you said that 25.5% of arrivals were from the Middle East. But it doesn't tell you what's your core market. Middle East seems to be absent in your core market. Is there a reason why that is? Because so many arrivals should equal to being them to be one of your core market indicators. So perhaps that could be clarified, I think. My last thing is I found that there was a little bit of lack of confidence with regard to the 7% that was said to be perhaps in the red line where there's underspending. If that's something could be said on that in that regard, I appreciate it. Thank you, Don.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Go and then responses. Otherwise, we'll be having too many questions.
Two quick questions. This bill that's coming up that links with the trade and industry, the investment policy framework. I'm not sure whether the department should get a job now. We have looked into this because we as South Africa, we have allowed our bilateral trade with Germany, which in a way is going to impact on our relations, particularly with poverty. This is not just going to be Germany and many others. Now, for me to ask whether you have, together with the department, in access so that you are able to cushion this, because they've been informed in time that we're going to come up with this new one. And how comfortable are you with the approach that you have taken? And also in the interim period, what are you going to do so as to say not necessarily faith, but to cause people to believe in what we as other people we are doing, because it's going to benefit. Okay. The last question that I think. The
He said, okay.
As usual, my job.
It starts from Platt, Myanmar, go down to Port St. John, to Bizarre, to about a coastal. Looking at the figure here, you find that the Eastern Cape is not performing that well. Could it be the relation or strengthening of our team at that particular point? Because if you are moving along that coastal line, I know the chairperson and team went to Port St. John. Everybody is just crying about Port St. John because it should be the hub and things should be happening there. Not that we don't have the national partners, we have the longest seat. But what are we doing there? What is the team doing in promoting that particular area and how are we relating
with the
department and your
counterparts
in that particular area?
Thanks. Over to you, Chairperson and the CEO.
Thank you, Chair. That's a mouthful of questions. I think we can try and group them to a certain extent. I think there's a significant degree of overlap on some of the issues that concern members, and I think. And then I would deal with some of the strategic issues, and then Mr. I can deal with the operational issues, and I would ask Tembi to just deal with the grading council issues, and specifically also to talk about, from a creativity point of view, what we're doing with TripAdvisor, because I think that might be of interest to the members. Just if we look at the broader issues that were asked by Mr. Farrow regarding seasonality, that's to say that the figures are correlated year on year. So the seasonality patterns are repetitive, so we are competing like with like. What we're obviously trying to do is broaden the top areas and to shorten the bottom areas. But, you know, we are influenced to a certain extent by when international parties travel, but the numbers are comparable. What is slightly different this year, for example, is when does Easter fall? And Easter fell in March this year, so we would see the first quarter numbers would be better. And last year when Easter fell into the second quarter, so the second quarter would be weaker from our point of view. I think the second thing to bear in mind, Honourable Chairperson, is when we look at the number of provinces visited, and I think the members asked this question rightly, is to bear in mind that if we look at the African land arrivals, most of those people, it's over border visitation, so they would by definition mostly visit one province only. And that is amalgamated into the total stats, and then they just throw it a little bit out. I think significantly, what we don't have here is a split between business and leisure. And at a place like Gauteng, as Mr. Farrow referred to, which gets a disproportionate share of business tourists. If you look at some of the smaller provinces, that you refer to, for example, like Mpumalanga, if we add a length of stay, for example, that you would see that they do a lot better because they're inclined to get more tourists, which is just over and above the people coming from Mozambique. So all I was saying on the pattern between the provinces is that one is actually a multidimensional issue. And in the interest of time, it's reflected here but more one-dimensionally than maybe give the necessary insight. So I don't think we should make too much of that slide as it is at the moment. Suffice to say that in every activity that we take, we really promote all nine provinces, international, with trade fairs, with international tour operators. And I would like to Lani to talk very briefly about the extent of the provincial road show program and consultation program that is undertaken recently to address specifically these issues. I think we should just talk very quickly about the embassies. I think we've really deepened our relationship with embassies. We've got a particular senior executive member that deals with embassies locally and internationally. I think in terms of the opening of the offices, ma'am, that Angola has proven to be a significantly tougher place to open an office than we anticipated. But we are there now. We are very close to having it. We've received all the approvals. It's also, I think, the most or second most expensive city in the world. Open office. So we've been exceptionally careful to make sure that we don't waste money there and that we go about it. So often where we could, we try to team up with people such as South African Airways or other South African entities that's already got a footprint there, that's gone through there. Also worldwide, you would know that the tax regimes are changing as governments are making sure that they're not losing out on tax money. That is, and previously the temptation was always there to open as part of DERCO or part of the embassy. That's really not allowed at all in terms of the appropriate convention. So every time we have to open an office in our own right, and that means that we have to apply for a special dispensation to be a foreign government entity that's not for that. And that unfortunately takes quite a long period of time, longer than we thought. But in the past, we've learned our lesson not to be too cavalier about that, because when the taxman comes, you know, he doesn't really care which country you are, he's looking for his money, so we don't want to get in that position. We've been in it in the past. But I think here we can, where we find it too difficult, I think the point that was raised earlier, that we should look at alternatives and go back that to ask. I think then the interaction with SADC at the strategic level, I think that is improving very significantly. And as an example of that, the minister will be hosting at the next Indaba a Minister's Day almost, with specificalized with top officials for all the African countries that's attended to, and to specifically focus on cooperation between us attacking the market as a whole, as a unit. So I think we are working very hard on that, and I think it is very much a priority with the department as well. I think to do the business with Germany, that was raised twice. Obviously, any news that reflects negatively is not good news for SA Tourism. You know, so what happened in the last week is not necessarily good news for us. But we have focused, and the reason why Germany has outperformed almost every other country in terms of performance in Europe, and has outperformed every other country, are really due to two or three things, I think. One, I think the German economy came from the economic crisis a lot stronger than any of the other. So in terms of disposable income and residual income in the German market that's available for travel, that's still there. The second thing is we've built over years excellent relationships with all the top German tour operators. Really, we know the top 6 or 7, and they control 85-90% of that market bar very well. And when we met them at WTM in the beginning of the year, they all told us that they are looking for 12-15% growth this year. So they are very bullish. It's a very concentrated, focused market. It's very easy for us in a way, because if you deal with 10 people, you're covered 90% of the market. So, and we have an excellent team there. So I think we are, obviously not the best thing for us, the uncertainty, but I think we are well covered in that particular market in that regard. And I think we look forward to continuing. So the last thing on, and that maybe goes back to the point on why do we target 18-year-olds. It's not so much because we think that 18-year-olds will spend a lot of money with us next year. But if you don't very early start incalculating the desire to travel, and that travel is an important way of allocating your future resources, and it's an aspirational thing. Once people establish habits, then it's more important to have great cell phone than to visit the place. It's very tough to handle. So we are trying at that level to create awareness of how travel can transform your life. I think that's why we start early in that market. I think, Officer Gola, I think that is much as I can say. And as far as home affairs are concerned, I think we have a good relationship. I know the department is working very hard on that regard, and I think they're meeting shortly. As regards that, I think the minister's got the whole visa issue very high on his agenda. I think that is enhanced. I think that is as much as I can answer to Moni with more difficult questions. Why don't I hand it over to you?
Hey, you think you've covered basically everything. I'm repeating what you covered. But I think on the question of the home affairs, which the last point you're touching on, the one other question which was asked was in terms of the new categories or the criteria that work on, what are the timelines. We are working very closely with them, and I think the timelines are deliverable within the next few months, and in fact we could be talking in the next month. We just don't want to put too much pressure on us. It's really a question of what filters they're using and how does it impact on our numbers. So it's a bigger task in us working on that, which we should be done. The earnings and the impact on our children, there's no doubt about it, and I think there are very many examples of areas where we have been successful in stimulating tourism when airlines are operating there. Beijing is a case in point, and we've seen instances with double digit growth figures and continues to be strong. We will obviously be very worried where Turkish Airways is putting out of market, which may be in contradiction to our mandate to bring tourism from the various markets. I think the challenge really between us and South African Airways is to be aligned in terms of money, that we don't contradict each other, and that we also have an understanding of the fact that they may have a balance of commercial as well as economic development mandate. We have met with South African Airways, they've come to our offices, and the CEO is leading the team. We have agreed on making sure that they do not make decisions unilaterally that make impact on us, and we are left to do the damage control where they have pulled out of food. So we believe that if they consult us on time, at least we'll have an understanding. So nobody can explain this better than ourselves, knowing that we are a long-haul destination. Wherever we can get direct flights, it's better. You know, traveling to any other country via other places where you fill a lot of connecting time, does not work out well for a long-haul destination. I think the chairman touched on the way we package ourselves in various markets using tour operators. We do that so that at least we can deliberately spread tourism around the country. One of the things that we have always faced as a challenge is that in some markets, South Africa has been placed as a high-end kind of destination and to the expense of the lower end of the market. South Africa is not sold on that basis, and we keep fighting with tour operators around the world. We are a very common destination. We've got packages that suit everybody. So this is the success we've had in Italy, because Italy had positioned us as a high-end kind of destination, which didn't work well. But we do focus on experiences. The chairman touched on what we do when we go to the various trade shows. It is about spreading this around the country. As the chairman was saying, I must explain a little bit the benefit of going on the official tourism visit. It is really precisely to make sure that firstly we understand the tourist experiences that are out there from an head office point of view, and not to be talking theoretically from head office. So we go and look to experience those kind of products that are already existing. But the second objective is to discover the hidden depths of our tourism. There is quite a lot that we get when we go to the places. The third consideration is we go and engage the key tourism stakeholders in the various provinces to get to understand how can we improve the marketing of the various provinces together with, in fact, we get hosted by the provincial tourism authorities at all times. And we also do the fourth important thing. We want every province to be able to distinguish itself by the unique selling propositions that are not duplicated around the country. Each one of them trying to say, this is why you must come to the Free State. This is why you must come to Mpumalanga. And not all of us around the country saying it's about safari experience, safari experience. It's not going to distinguish you. Firstly, to get South Africans to visit each province is not going to be about the same thing. If it is lifestyle, and it's nightlife, they can't all be selling the same thing. They've got to sell something unique. So when we visit these provinces, we at least force them to show us their top must-see five experiences. From that level, it forces them to be unique, and we use the marketing forum to push that point. Past that stage, this is how we are going to take the provinces to the world, the uniqueness that we see in various provinces. This has really been such a revelation that we're seeing great success. It also helps us in talking to the other point. Why are the other provinces not doing well, and what are they doing about it? It gives us as South African tourism an opportunity to cherry pick on what we can amplify on the international platform, as well as making sure that we understand the budgetary constraints that exist, and whether it's resources in the various provinces, and how we can support them without taking over their responsibility. But that's exactly what we do, and it has worked so far. And talking of offices, I think in the assistance of the foreign arts offices, I think you've touched on it. I just want to add one or two quick points. That is, we really use South African Airways, we use the embassy, we even in some instances share premises in Angola and in Nigeria. We've done just that. So it would work for us. We use them as intelligence on the ground. In Brazil, we worked with embassy for a long time. They were the ambassador was actually leading the discussion after the minister's visit and the DG's visit there. So we also used the department in terms of the interpretation of every MOUs that are signed between us and countries. Before we go to any country, the department has custodians of the agreements, will be the ones that activate the various markets that we need to activate. So we're working very closely. We're not working in isolation of each other, not at all. Yes, Kevin, you covered the targeting. It's all talk to schools. Is the budget enough? Not really. We can never say we've got enough budget. But what we do, we do two kind of plans. The one plan is the constraint plan. It's constrained in the sense that, no, this is the budget we have. This is what we can deliver on that budget. And we do an unconstrained plan. This unconstrained plan is our ambition. If we had money, what can we do? As we speak now, that plan is sitting in the department. We already know that if we had money on the promotion of domestic tourism, what more could we do? So we can quickly be activated. That last week, Saturday and Friday, we were with the department when they were doing their planning for 2 days. and it is clear from that that there will be a windfall of money that is coming through. We have already submitted our request for that, and the CJ has committed to supporting our initiatives in so far as that is concerned. We will always be very professional about the people that we appoint. No nepotism, no tokenism, no band of friends, nothing at all. We understand the risk that they have, and in fact, it is our indictment in such a mistake. We would like to say on this particular market for the long haul, and, but avoiding risk, that sometimes you employ shady characters, nothing so much to do with being a brother or friend, but it's a lot of when you go out there, really, in some of these markets, it's a very difficult thing to do. So, that, I think those are the issues that we see in China. There's a lot of visitors, later in business, it's a bit difficult, but we're now fine-tuning this to understand it. In China, we can give you an example of that. We've seen that 48% in the past year is business-driven. It's now moving to 52% being business-driven. So we're having a very detailed analysis of understanding every market and overall what is the breakdown so that we can shift our investments correctly as well. We do have initiatives and strategies to penetrate new markets. Yes? Among others, it is the initiative on hubs. When we talk about hubs, it is to really make sure that we work within limited budgets that we got, but we go out there with new messages as well. That is the new thing that we are communicating. The hub-self connection when we set up is very, very important. The status of the Angolan open, what we have been talking about was the presence. And the presence was defined by the fact that we had a representative, which was a trade relationship present in every market. But that's not a fully fledged office. Now we're talking about a fully fledged office where we're saying this representative works for us but not on our payroll. It's more like a general sales representative in the language of how we do it there. So that has been the kind of discussion that we have. But right now it's going to be a fully fledged in the sense that the country manager is the South African that is going to take over, and then we put other staff members in that office. It has been one person, when you talk of the representative, it's one person who only goes out there and finds it in the marketplace. And that's basically what we have been doing. I think, Tim, you can talk a little about, maybe let me deal with the big one and the big law. Yes, we would definitely give you that detail. We don't have it now. That's why I made the apology to say it depends on the level of detail that you want. The last time I indicated to the chairperson and honorable members that sometimes it will help us if you were to give us an indication of what's bothering you, what's in your mind, so that we can prepare, so that I don't sound anecdotal when I say, I think now I can talk to you in numbers and you won't even know whether it's true or not. But I don't want to do that. I want to show you the set of text that talks to exactly what your question is all about. So, Middle East arrival is really not coming from the core market, but when you look at the portfolio that we've got, it says we have there's a difference in defining the core market, the technical market, investment market, the inter level of investment. There is 6% in our core market, then 20%, 15, 5, 5. So there is a level of activity. The market is just not just happening. And it doesn't mean the numbers will only come from the core market. But I will also indicate that the base from the Middle East was very low. So you see a number that looks very, very big. But there is only a level of activity there. The 7% you're saying we don't have confidence in explaining this, this is on the CAPEX expenditure. That's the reason we started off by saying it's delayed office opening. It's also delayed approval of our head office. And the bulk of the money the CFO has indicated is sitting in our head office expenditure. We are confident that we are not speed talking you, telling you the truth. I think that covers it. Vital treaties. This is a very difficult one. We are pretty much guided by the department and other key stakeholders. Of course, we do get worried. There are things that we have seen happening that have looked like we should have been warned about it, but it hasn't happened. I think 2-3 weeks ago, I was in Italy with the deputy minister, and we met with about three different ministers and directors in Italy, and each one of them was throwing a very serious chessboard at us, about a decision that the country has made that we should have been warned about. But we are South Africans, we are part of the team, and when things like that happen, we don't want to blame anybody. We roll the punches and we come back and regroup, and that's what we do all the time. Okay, thank you very much. I may say I have some specific questions that are in through here, we may have missed out. It will not be because we are trying to avoid asking the question.
Thank you, Selene. Honorable Mr. Shah, how creative are we in trying to incentivize people to get graded? I think that is a work in progress, and it will always be for the grading council. But I think it's very important to start at the beginning. The grading council is the only institution that South Africa has set up. We can give an operator the right to call themselves star anything. So if you want to call yourself star one, star two, star, there's only one institution that can give you that right, or that authority, and that is the grading council. So that's the first thing. And secondly, that is the single biggest thing we are selling and encouraging people, because we recognize that you are in business, you are in accommodation, and you want to differentiate yourself from Tim B&B. So you want to call yourself, I'm star rated and he's not, and therefore I offer quality, there's some better independently, so come stay with me because I offer value for money. And you always have a feedback line, should I not offer you the service that people. So that's the assurance that we are, as a mandate, we are giving to the market. The challenge comes in the sense that, and in a way I'm going to answer your question, Honorable Mohammed, in that people don't necessarily see tangible value. Once they've gone through the positioning in the market to say, I want to call myself star grade, they don't really see tangible ongoing value in staying grade, and therefore they can't. They kind of for various reasons. Some of them go out of business because of tough trading conditions. And some of them just find a grading, they will get the answer that grading is too expensive. But it's not the extra cost of grading that's expensive, it's the upkeep. Because if you don't paint the walls, if your aircon is still needing a mask on the wall, and you replace the carpet and the sheets, that is the expense, that's where the tough, the difficulty of being graded is. In that you have to maintain your status, because if you're not maintaining a four-star, you have to come back and say you are no longer a four-star, but you're a two-star. So that remains a challenge. And we always work with people like PEP, and we refer people to PEP to say, go there for funding, but that remains one of the challenges. So creatively, what are we doing? As the chairman alluded to, about 2 years ago, we formed a relationship with TripAdvisor. TripAdvisor being the largest travel review site in the world. And that's the only reason why TripAdvisor. If Tulane's review site comes up tomorrow and happens to be the largest number, we will immediately shift to that site. But right now, it's TripAdvisor, the largest review site in the world with millions of unique visitors a month. And on that site, you get to people who've been to the country, go on and give the view. The relationship with TripAdvisor is twofold. Firstly, we've managed to convince them to say, if KFBNC wants to get listed and advertise itself on TripAdvisor so that people can go on and give comments, please check with us if they are really 3-star or 1-star or five, whatever it is that they're claiming from a star grading perspective. And they've also agreed to say, if somebody is not graded by us, then they're not going to allow them to call themselves by anything because they're not with us. So that was, for us, was a huge progress, you know, and a huge benefit. And this is the first relationship that TripAdvisor has with any grading council of the world. So that was the first major achievement. Now the second achievement that we're still working on is, and we're finalizing it hopefully with some of my colleagues back at SMT, is for TripAdvisor to give us analytics on a monthly or quarterly basis. Just a report to say, across provinces, what are the type of complaints and what kind of complaints and how many are there? Is it more on hotels or on B&Bs or is it on service? Is it on features? Whatever the case is, we need to really drill down and find out what is it that makes people happy about coming to stay in South Africa and what makes people unhappy coming to stay in South Africa. And then use that information to go back to Tim's B&B to say, Tim, look at all the complaints associated with your B&B. This is where you need to improve, and this is what you need to continue doing, etc. So that is the second phase of our relationship with TripAdvisor, and we believe that offers us that unique ability to be able to at least make sure that South Africa maintains its international competitiveness as a tourism destination. So Over and above that, we had a certain session on the 25th and 26th of September, as I was coming to. We've come up with a few, in fact, three key unique, we think, very unique tangible benefits to encourage people to stay great. And unfortunately, we haven't discussed and finalized internally, and whether, given our restrictions of operating within the PFA, it would be possible to implement. So we're still deliberating it internally. And once we have gone through the process, we'll definitely share with the committee. But we have come up with tangible ideas, and we hope that it's been implemented. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Mkama.
Just one comment. I really am encouraged to hear Shahin Manjaveh and asking the question, what are we going to do different in the future? In terms of the long-term strategy about domestic tourism, I think that one of the things that we're not doing very well and it must become an agenda of our future is how to work on this issue of changing the culture of our people about domestic tourism. You know, the only thing I'll say is the world in one country. And I think that we probably all know that most young people and even adults don't know enough about their country. And it's something that we're not doing terribly well. So this education program that's not only going to be done by South Dakota. We have to have Department of Education, Department of Arts and Culture, we have lots of heritage sites all over the place. You know, when you can ask people that, tell people that the Johannesburg Mountains are older than Everest in terms of millions of years, and that actually they have more interesting things to be in the Johannesburg than climbing Mount Everest. It's a revelation that a lot of people don't understand. So the education program about the long-term study of changing the mindset and inculcating a culture of travel and appreciation of your own country, something that all collectively together with other partners in government and out of government, we have to emphasize. And that will get us the results that we're looking for in terms of changing the numbers and changing the attitude of people to their own country.
Okay, now, thank you. Astute ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Shah, let me stop you from asking, except if it is really, really important. We are very much behind on time. Okay? I'm really sorry, but I think for the purposes of the biennial report, we have got information that can enable us to make a determination. And I think that was the defense of the hearing and against all the different existing performance points. So I would say that perhaps let us conclude on this and then get on to the next point of the agenda. But before that, perhaps let me just say thank you to the department and for responding, and then for accounting satisfactorily as well, because I think there is nothing as discouraging to Parliament as when you get junior officials coming. I mean, just say to Parliament, these people are refusing to account, but the willingness to account for your own tour to your own government, I think is actually appreciated and gives us hope going forward. And once more, thank you. And let us then go to the next point on the agenda. I know that we've got already tea outside, but I think we can be in a position to finish the agenda.
Thank you.
Sorry, we couldn't conclude properly, but we've got to attend to our points of the agenda. The second point on the agenda is the adoption of the budgetary review and recommendation report. And then there are changes. And I think that let us allow the the content advisor to come and then specify the changes. I know that you must have noted the changes, but I think it's proper for us to be specific where did the report, what was added, what was amended, so that when we go forward, we know exactly what it is.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were no substantial changes to the report that was tabled last time. I would like to refer members to page 4 of the revised document. On page 4, on number 2, the overview of the key relevant policy focus areas. Members will recall the chairperson had indicated that they wanted to look at whether we covered the policy framework very well. So there is that opening paragraph there. So this is the only amendment that we received, and we effected it accordingly. So under key government policy 2.1, that is the only opening paragraph that we added. So the rest is the same. But then also on page 5, members will notice now that in terms of those policies, we now start with the State of the Nation address. Previously, the document started with the National Development Plan. And the feeling there was, when we started the period under review, the National Development Plan was not enforced. Some of the issues were not covered by National Development Plan. So what we did there, we then moved, if members can then go to page 32. We then moved, it's the same thing, we didn't add anything except the recommendation. We took the whole thing and we put it under recommendation that moving forward, then the department and FPT will have to align with the National Development Plan. So all we added there was that recommendation under 8.2.18. So that's all about the changes.
Okay, let us get comment about the changes and then move as you move on. Mr. Farrell?
Okay, I noticed the change, and it's alarmed me in a sense that it is a key government policy. And I believe if we're going to talk about the relevant policy focus areas, we can't ignore that. But I'm just trying to look in my diary as to when, in fact, the national plan was tabled, because it says to tell within this financial year. So I'll put it at the end, and I know the reason why, because there is a recommendation attached to it, but I don't see why we can't include its overall thinking in a key government policy and then use just the statement at the end under recommendations under page 32 to the fact that all federal governments should align their tourism activity budget to this plan. Because why? Let me explain. At the, what do you call it, the summit, Jim? Yes, of course, the one we had now. You'll notice that in the presentation from the National Development Plan presented, they highlighted the infrastructure build, which effectively has a direct impact on tourism. You build a dam, there's potential there, it has an SME connotation. So we cannot ignore it, and I don't know whether we shouldn't just mention it. We don't have to detail it. If it doesn't fall in this financial year, then I'll withdraw my remarks. But clearly, I seem to think that this thing does. And it was actually presented to Parliament, which was adopted earlier in the year, and therefore it does have bearing. So when you talk about the first paragraph and two about key government policies, even if you just mention it, and then use the statement that we've come up with here about the recommendations that all spheres should align to this, it would mean that in our recommendations we are asking those other departments to come on board. But otherwise, I think that the report is very well done, and I'm glad that there wasn't any major changes to it, because I think a lot of work went into the content. And I would then go and just like to compliment the authors. And if we deal with that matter, then maybe you can just come back to me with some very small semantical changes, Chair.
Thank you. Okay, Mr.
I just wanted to inform Mr. Farrell that it was tabled on the 15th of August in 2012.
On 2012. Mm-hmm. That's what it's in the
final. It was after the biennial, so I'm not sure.
Does the whip have anything to say? Yeah. Now it was about the inclusion of the NDP. Mr. Shah?
Chair, I just have a concern which I want to raise. That is related to the SRI project and our oversight finding. I recall in our earlier observations we made that there were, besides criminal activity on the part of the public, what you call the implementers or the implementation managers, that there was also political interference and people taking advantage of this project and trying to control it for their own purpose. But when I look at page 17, it speaks about reducing crime and corruption there. Two, it only refers to EPWP program and project implementers, which is called in the department. On page 18, Roman numeral 2, foreign expanded public works program, they also simply blame project implementers. But we found that it was not only the implementers, but it was political interference, which we had recognized in our report for over. I think that is a very critical point, which needs to be perhaps reflected here, since we are under that section of SRI project. And then there's just one spelling error on page 18 under Roman numeral 2 for expanded, you can just click that. And that word is offenders, it's O-F-F-E-N-C-E-S. Do you see that, Dr. Kuzan? On page 18, under fraud in expanded public program. The word, some project implementing agents had committed criminal offenses.
Okay.
Third line, on page 18, under Roman numeral 2?
Yes.
So, Chair, basically what I'm saying is that we have confined the maladministration of criminal activity to the implementers. But in clearance, remember when we went there, we saw that it was not just the implementers, but it was also political manipulation that was also affecting this project. And I think that needs to be said, and it must be recorded. Thank you.
Honorable Mr. Bengo.
With all your respect, my colleague, they keep on coming to the issue of the political interference. The issue of defining what political interference is because what he established is first of all, well implemented, and we engage every person there, even those that I'm now speaking to, those that are supposed to be running that are coming. I'm not talking here about political interference, I'm talking about those as family responsibilities. Because a local municipality cannot be assigned to any political party per se, but it is constituted by officers who are supposed to do the oversight over what is happening in that particular municipality. We are talking about the taxpayers' money, people are head to money, just like ourselves, as parliamentarians. I'm then saying, Chairperson, if you could define what a political interference that our member is referring to, because here, if you're finding some weaknesses at a particular local municipality, could you then come and say that it's a political interference? Because these were weaknesses that we identified and then producing what we look in. So that when we establish that there is this particular program about the implementers, it links directly to those who assign the responsibility to those implementers. So there is a challenge there. And the portfolio committee. These are the issues that we have to begin to highlight to then say to the department, these are the challenges that you are currently confronted with, same as the ECDC programs that we're talking about and the challenges that we're talking about. Because we are now telling the department to then simply say, go down there and see what is happening. That's why I'm a bit cautious. So then say, if I were to bring up and say there was a social injustice, how are we going to begin to define that? What is that the current challenge that we're talking about? Thank you.
Just to satisfy Mr. Shaw's concern, which I think we are aware, and I also hear what Mr. Bengal says, we, if you remember the lady that cried so much, I mean, there was clearly a interference by the local government executive, mayorship, etc., in that project. But what we said was this, that the implementer must be, first of all, transparent in terms of the negotiation process to ensure that all the EIAs and various other components of the local government which initiate them to make sure that the success of a project like that must be broadly discussed. And we asked an appeal for that communication to take place. But I'm quite happy that under the local government sector where we've identified this problem, let's call it interference. We have covered it by virtue of the fact that we say that page 20,
thank you.
We say municipalities control those rates. They control the bylaws and the electricity price, which affect those SMEs, etc., and the industry at large. And they should provide an enabling environment. That, to me, means the facilitation process to ensure the success of projects of that nature on the ground. And unless that happens, we also identified that the reason for it not properly taking place was the fact that there was no AED and no Directorate of Tourism in the municipality. I'm quite happy that you have broadly covered that aspect because clearly the whole thing needs to be aligned in such a way that when the implementers go down there that they talk to each other, particularly at the municipal level, to ensure that this doesn't happen. And it also, you know, you see the mandate and the project description, as I call it, has to actually identify that. I say that the implementer must be dealing with the community, there must be certain roles that the municipality play, there are these, that, and that's where that process would happen. If it's clearly defined, there shouldn't be any involvement or any conflict to that process which took place that you witnessed. So I think that, I'm quite happy that it's covered there. You can put in the words that you like, but I think at the bottom line is that, as Mr. Bengal says, that we try to get local government to realize their role. And unless they recognize that the Clarence Bory was a basic bylaw, that's all. It was a basic bylaw which would resolve that whole conflict. And I think that's what I would like to instill here, that we actually, you know, get to that conclusion. Because the Clarence report now, really, I think it's rather than the fact that we have raised the issue as to whether we include that national plan as one or not, I believe it should be up front, and it is part of the process. Yeah.
Chair, I've heard my learned colleague, Rila, and my colleague as well. See, the point I'm trying to make when I talk about political interview, it's not about making political points, scoring, because the person involved came from the NC background. The point I'm making doesn't matter which party rules the municipality. If the department gives the project a club implementer, you implement it on the ground, the municipality and its functionary and political head have no business interfering in that project, influencing it or taking control of it. Finish and done. What we found was a speaker of a municipality. You know who I'm talking about. Now, I'm not saying that if it was from my party also, I would be as passionate about it as I feel right now. That gentleman was the cause for the burning down of that project. Right? Now, he's not a player implementer. He's not a project implementer. So the question to ask is, how did it happen that he took control of that project if it was not him using political influence? So when I say political influence, that's what I'm referring to, abusing your political office and connectivity to take over what is a community asset. Now for me that's problematic and it has happened. And it is still going to happen in some other places. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised when I get this private briefing tomorrow
that this is exactly what I will find, which I'm going to be having a briefing tomorrow, a private briefing, in which I'll see these things, but I'll keep it to myself, because I care about this country. We need somewhere to say that we cannot afford, doesn't matter which political party, no political interference in social responsibility projects. Didn't it? The same story, the lady was crying, we all cried with her. And there too, there was local municipality interference, which is under the, you know, which party. So I'm not blaming the party, but I'm saying it just happened. It doesn't matter who it is. But it should just not happen, whether it's DAIP, I don't care, DA, whoever. It happened and it must not happen. That needs to be pointed out somewhere, how you word it. I know it doesn't sound nice for the ruling party to, you know, if I say now, political interference, somebody out there is going to be upset, how do you put that into the report? I'm quite sensitive about those things. I'm scared of these things, I'm not naive. But are we going to leave it out because we are afraid of what somebody on the top is going to be thinking, how dare you allow such a thing to go into a report? I say to heck with whoever is sitting up with the things about these matters. We are South Africans, we are a committee, we care about all these projects, we want our people to benefit, they are our people, they don't care, it doesn't matter who they vote for at the end of the day. That lady that was crying was a human being, not an ANC supporter, DA supporter, or anybody else. And this must stop.
Okay, thank you very much, thank you very much, Mr. Isha. But I think perhaps it is proper to get current information. The speaker has been dismissed as a result of us going there after the event. And you can go and find out that guy has been fired because of what transpired in that meeting. And because it was his private interest overriding his public interest. You know, sometimes politicians on their own would like to look for their private interest. Let me take specific examples. In that specific example, that guy was hiding the fact that he was a speaker because he knew that the political party wouldn't accept that conduct. Otherwise, he would have gone and said, I'm the speaker of this place, I've got the support of my party, and therefore I'm doing this. But he was trying to hide as much as possible that he was a speaker. Though perhaps I think it would be proper in that instance to say that in some instances it looks like private interest of some individuals tended to to be more primary to public interest, but rather than saying political, because that thing is so broad, you can't.
Can I make a suggestion?
I am quite sensitive to everything that's happening. Chair, I agree with your point. What we I think can do is to say that we also found people using their own personal, you know, the influence that they have to misappropriate a project. So something where people abuse office and interfere. You know, don't necessarily say political interference. Let's say individuals holding public office in abusing their position to benefit themselves in this position. So we don't want any, you know, a public office bearer, put it that way, to interfere and try to manipulate outcomes and try to misappropriate projects. We know something to that effect. I'm willing to, you know, go with that. That it doesn't seem at all. I'm sure it's not party policy to that. I have no doubt in my mind. But people are abusing that affiliation and the power that comes with it, you see. So somewhere we need to put something there that says, listen, no public office bearer is going to go and use his office to manipulate any project.
Thank
you, Chair. I just want to say that I would agree with Comrade Bango and the other comrade, that an AMB environment for the activity to function in the best way possible with the interest of the of our constituents would be a way to put it, to allay your fears in terms of your interest to say that political interference has taken place. I think an enabling environment would actually suffice for what your concern is, I think. Thank you.
Mr.
agreement.
Paragraph, maybe as a last sentence or some footnote there.
express appreciation of the fact that action has been taken. Because this is what we are trying to encourage.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, before we, maybe this was not tourism, I think I was preparing for my other budget debate on human segments. I came across an article in this public, that they call public. One of the complaints that the Auditor General held against the department is that people are found to have done corrupt things, but no action is taken. And therefore, if the Department of Tourism or whoever is taking action on a specific issue that the committee has been concerned about, I think we should really appreciate that. That is what we want. Action should be taken. Yeah. That's my point.
Thank you, Chair. No, I'm quite sensitive to what my colleague is saying, everybody is saying. My concern was that in that chapter, we are only talking about project implementation agents, that the problem is only with them. You get what I'm saying, Manjob? Now, in the case of the firing of the speaker of that one, I commend the ANC because one of our own members actually raised it at the provincial level with the ANC leadership. They took action. The department, it's not the department that took him out. It is the party that felt that was the right thing to do. And it tribute them for that. And it was one of our members who did it. And I salute him too, he's not sure at the moment. But the point I'm making is, this document only speaks about the implementers being back. So what I think we need to do is to say that we also found public office bearers abusing their position without saying political interference. So this thing must address the issue that we found public office bearers, doesn't matter wherever they come from, so that in future they watch over two things. One is the implementation of the project, the manager, as well as where the money is being put in that municipality. No public office bearer must come and try to abuse the situation and use it for his advantage. That's all I'm asking.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Actis. I still think what you've discussed in here is important, but I think that where it should come and where we should enlarge the process is that these interference levels took place at local government. That's why I went straight to the local government paragraph on page 20 and said, look, that is where it needs to be addressed, because if local government becomes the guardianship or the guardian and the protector of individuals in terms of that process, this will not happen. But what was happening is that they were not providing that guardianship. Now, when you talk about an enabling environment, it means that that person who come in or beneficiaries, in the case of 10, 15 people that have been elected to go and to run that tourism project, should be seen to be facilitated and guided and guarded against any interference, be it political, be it, you know, whoever. Now, the issue that I have here is that I think it's important to address that, and also, as somebody suggested, to acknowledge the fact that there was a reaction to what we identified there. And maybe in that environmental area, we could add something to the fact that, you know, that should provide an enabling environment for tourism to thrive at local level and should be the guardian of individual interests and to prevent interference. If they do that, because you'd solve the problem. Because if you look at where the precise issues took place, it was a local government authority expressing their seniority over an individual. In that case, the lady that tried so much, in saying that, no, we wanted to have a share in this thing. You know? And they then made it very difficult for that woman to enable to get that project completed. Why? Because they stopped all the environmental impact assessments. They said they hadn't been approved, they didn't want this to happen, they wouldn't connect the lights, the water. They then even started taking away the bits and pieces of the project. So I think it's the local government must be ensured, must be advised that they are the guardians of these projects in terms of the facilitation process, and they should protect the interests of those people who are interfering. And if it goes in there, then I think that we've covered what we are talking about here, because that's really where the issue is. I don't know whether I'm correct in saying that, Chair, but I'll just suggest that maybe if we can get local government in that paragraph on page 20 to understand that their role is also to act as a guardian or a protective agency against interference and personal interest, then I think we will have covered the issues that we try to address. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah,
I mean, no, I can't summarize before it because I was not here. just summarize it for me.
Okay. Chairperson, when you left, there had been such a change as Honorable Shaw, I think, but the last point that was raised by Honorable Farrell, if I may read the sentence and see such a thing. On page 20, there under local government, starting by municipalities, it will now read as, municipalities should provide a general environment for tourism to thrive at local level and should be guardians of individual interest over community benefit.
Okay, no,
all right. I'll back on that one.
Okay. No, okay. Thank you very much for your contribution. Really, you are showing a lot of maturity.
See, my whole job in Maston's made a very good point, that we should compliment you ever, you know, in the process of ensuring that they're very swift in acting against those type of
people.
But can I just go into really systematical things? At the last meeting on page 25, in regard to the reporting system, it's the second paragraph at the top there. Mm-hmm. I did recall saying, and I made notes to the effect that we should actually also ensure that you can't just develop a budget and then say, done, and walk away. The role and the responsibility of the department for after care to ensure that it's sustainability. We don't want to go back to that place like we did see, and it's run down and nobody's bothered and no one's, you know, and millions have been invested in it. So in that paragraph there, in terms of capacity building for provincial project managers on project management, close monitoring of course before payment, I just want to make a note there that that should also take place post project sign-off. In other words, you sign the project off, but you don't just walk away from it. So there should be some aftercare training, monitoring to ensure sustainability. Because otherwise we are not achieving our, you know, what we're trying to do here as being sustainable projects. So that was just a comment which I didn't see it captured in here, and I would appreciate that. I think that we, and understand that most of us would agree that you can't just, you know, development is, you know, I've been there, you can do something and walk away, and then you just leave it in the communities. They don't know how to carry on, they don't have the necessary support mechanisms to ensure sustainability. So I think we need to just put something in about that, in that paragraph.
Okay, thank you. I think it's in line with proper project management. You after finishing the project, then you'll need to. Yes,
I think I will
set the deadline for the report. Mm-hmm. Can't the report. Yeah, in fact, that is why we wanted to make sure that when we summarize, we agree with the summary, so that the words, the actual words that are put in are the words that you know.
Okay, I've got a few little comments. Chair, just to also add value to what I've been saying, on page 28, 8.2.3, SIR projects should be directed at sustainable, just put sustainable job creation there as well, because we don't want jobs that are not decent jobs with decent work, and I think that is the word that we should be using to ensure that there is continuity. That's the last line of Roman numeral 4. SIR project should be directed, and you've got job creation, sustainable job creation. I think that is the correct terminology, politically correct as well. Okay. And then I've just got some little comments, which I think will make the report refined. When we go into the recommendations, and if you go to page 29, the first What we do is we make a statement and we make a recommendation. And I think that what we need to do is to just make a new paragraph after each recommendation so it stands away from the statement. You've done it like that, Dr. Rotterway, too, but it's just one there that didn't do it. It is recommended that, and you just move that one line down, and then everything will follow. So that's the one. Then if you go over the page, under the committee note and lack of edit, it is recommended that, just make it a new paragraph, because that is what we are saying. And then if you go to 8.2.12, unresolved land reform plan, the recommendations are all embraced in the paragraph that just needs to be divorced again. There's another paragraph there. And then the same thing on 8.2.1.6. And then, Chairman, I'm very happy with this report. Thank you very much.
One thing, Will.
Just for adoption of amendment.
Right. Manjoy, do you want to say anything, me?
No. Okay.
Move Pengu.
Seconded Faro. Oh, do you want to do
something? If you look at the report, the half minute for the Thursday, 17th of October, under 2.1.1, the budget of Program 4. It said the budget of Program 4 says domestic tourism needed to be increased. If we're talking about the budget needs to increase.
Yeah.
So that's going to find its way on program 4 on the PRR. We need to say that if the budget needs to increase, it will be Department of Tourism share out its mandate effectively. Look at the minutes of 17th of October under recommendation. Consideration of the budget review and recommendation report. We make a recommendation and we are saying domestic tourism needed to increase. I think it's tourism budget. For the tourism, and that's exactly what I raised today. I asked a question about marketing for domestic tourism, remember? And I was wondering whether we had made such a recommendation for domestic tourism to increase the budget, and it is actually there. So, in program 4. So, what we need to say is domestic tourism budget needed to be increased. You see?
I'm not sure if that is addressed on page 27, because we're looking at increasing budget in general.
Yes.
So domestic tourism will be embedded in those things because we have tourism development today. So tourism development will embrace every other thing, including
But what I was saying was since this is what you call a minute.
Yes.
So we have to ensure that we correct the minutes as well. Because learning from this, this is what we got here. But the fact is that this is what we discussed at this minute. So it's the budget that needed to be increased. If we say domestic tourism needed, you actually say tourism budget. So we got correct that minute because we are adopting them for an unadopted policy.
I think that one is agreed.
Yeah.
That domestic tourism should be increased. What we say in document is marketing and so forth. Which indirectly also means
it talks about budget. I'll tell you why. Yeah. It says increase why? To enable the department to carry out its mandate effectively.
Right.
That's what we're saying, you see. So it has to be referring to a budget. Yes.
Okay, I think that one really just clarifies what we mean. So I think it won't harm us to it. That one. Adopted with an amendment, Bengu. And then and then the two sets of men. Oh, first we can adopt the minutes that time.
Wait for the meeting.
Oh, should be okay. Let us three minutes.
I'd like to agree with the list of the 22nd of October in a few copies. I have much anger. I will say, maybe someone should take it.
I also do not have a problem with the minutes, but I just want to check on the attendance. Has everybody been there? And then perhaps we can then look at other things. But I think the minutes are well written in there. Okay.
Chair, 17 October, my colleague Mr. Caro has apologized. Apology is noted, someone?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. Those are the things that we wanted to have seen. So, the set of the minutes of the... Is it the 22nd of October? Move adoption. The second evaluator. I think we are over with the business of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Long live the
chair. Sure, thank you. Okay,
Thank you.